Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Into the 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 30 minutes, we get to the Chiefs red half hour. Who's taking a jump? Who's staying the same? Maybe who's falling back? We'll throw that out there. A couple players involved and a new practice squad requirement that actually could benefit the Chiefs. Mitch Holthus was on with Fesco in the morning, and it's something we hadn't thought a whole lot about, but now maybe it guarantees a few guys are going to make the roster that we thought maybe were on the verge of potentially being cut to start this season. So we'll get to that during the Chiefs red half hour. But it's a Tuesday. That means it's time for the Forum, and we welcome in Rob Britton from The Drive. It's been a little while. I think the last time we were maybe just starting MLS's back turn, maybe that was the last time you were in studio. What's up, man?
I have not been in studio since you guys have both been back. Because last time I was in studio was you and Bink Gold. So,
oh, true.
Okay. Trying to think. Yeah, I don't think I've been in when Cody's been in. This is a weird sensation looking over there, not seeing Bink.
Sorry,
Not an insult. Just
very disappointing.
Yeah, it did sound a little.
The world was very weird and still is, so it's understandable that I haven't been in studio with both of you guys.
You and Bink share at least one thing, your love for college football. Now, while I think he might be on much more serious, we need to worry about Bink watch,
yes.
You are probably, as a Kansas football season ticket holder, depressed about how little you get to see this year.
Hold on, stop.
Wait, are you still there?
Stop.
I'm still there. I still need to donate the money.
You have KU football season tickets.
I have had KU football. Well, me and my dad have had KU football season tickets since 2002.
Can I ask why? And I'm a KU grad. Can I ask why on earth you're paying for KU football tickets?
So it's partly like
2002.
It's like the father son element more than anything. Because in 2001-2002, Bill Whittemore's, I guess it'd be first year because he was the JUCO transfer.
Yeah.
My dad's client had season tickets because he was an alum and and he was really down on the team, and he gave us a bunch of tickets. We went to a lot of games, and they went to a bowl game that year. They got smoked by Phil Rivers, but we started going to games. And the following year, when they were supposed to be a little better, my dad's client was like, yeah, you're not going to games on my tickets anymore because now the team isn't embarrassing. So we decided to buy tickets in the end zone. It was like this cheap family plan deal. The idea was all four of my family members would go, but my brother and mom never really committed to it. So me and my dad have been going to KU games since like 2003. So we like saw the rise. We were like, and now that
the fall,
I feel like, you know, I'm not going to, I keep thinking to myself, this is rock bottom. It's going to come up from here. I'll stick it out. I mean, because 06, 07, 08 was
just
fine.
I get the father-son angle. That makes sense. That's cool. But, like, otherwise, if you just have a game you want to go to, I can probably get $8 tickets.
But now he's been doing it for, like, 20 years, man.
Now it's just part of my Saturday culture. You're right,
like,
though.
It's like sleeping on a certain side of the bed or, you know, it's just its habit now.
You're 100% right. If I didn't have the tickets, I could still go to the games, no problem. Because, like, last year, we went to the Texas Tech game, which was homecoming. And my buddy's like, hey, I'm going to go too. And I'm like, okay, cool. And he found tickets like that. And his tickets were cheap and they were better than ours. But I was like, you know, this is what we do. So we'll meet you up there. But yeah, it's kind of like, and we've talked about ejecting on the season tickets. Basically, Gil, Weiss, Beatty. We're doing this again.
You made it through Weiss, Gil, and Beatty. How could you ditch now?
Yeah, that's the thing. Every time we think, oh, it's time to eject, we're kind of like, you know what? It can't, or like Buddy Bell, it can't get worse. They went 0-12 with David Beatty. It's got to rise.
Uh-huh. It has technically gotten better, just mildly.
It's
I mean, hey, Kay, you might end up with an undefeated season this year. So
I
think there's a chance that happens. So.
Well, that's and I really, as much as I love KU football, I'd hate if they were undefeated because that means we don't get to see college football. Like Cody said, I'm probably tier two below Bink for be alert of college football, but. Yeah, I believe KU's trending up, but I've also fallen for the jig before, so we'll see.
When it comes to college, though, this is my – I'm curious if you guys see it the same, or at least you do. My thought is ACC and SEC are like, screw you guys, we're playing. And they might change their mind in like 3 weeks, but as of right now, if you ask them today, like, screw you guys, we're playing. The Pac-12's like, we're out. The Big Ten's like, well, we thought we were out, but we thought we'd have more people who were out with us. So we're probably out, but give us time. And the Big 12 is like, what's going on, guys? Are you so which side are we supposed to be on? Because we're waiting to make that decision because we just want to be one of the cool kids.
The thing I've seen is it looks like the Big 12 is waiting for power and numbers, and they're going to get stuck in the middle. Because I agree. I think the Big 10 is leaning out, although every report we get, which I'm 100% convinced that whoever works in the Big 10 is feeding every single media member
correct.
The story as it happens, because that story is evolving too quickly for having it not leak from everywhere. I think the Big Ten and Pac-12 are going to be out. I think the ACC and SEC are going to be in. And what the Big 12 is going to have to do is be like, which side do we want to fall on? They're hoping against hope that it's three in, one out, and they can just join the normal, we're going to be the in crowd. But if it's 2-2 and the Big 12 has to make a decision, no chance they make the right one and no chance it gets done in any fast timeline at all.
Yeah, it seems like, too, it's you remember realignment in 2010, it was like coaches, 80s, and players, not so much players during realignment, but we're all on the same page, and that's what we're seeing. And then it's versus like the presidents, and then you've got politicians getting involved into it as well. It's very similar to 2010 in that regard. And
everyone has a say in it?
Yeah, like everybody
thinks they should.
Yeah, thinks they should is probably the better way to put it there. And at the end result here is that we've got coaches saying, I think, what they have to say publicly. Deep down, like, I would love to know, like, Scott Frost's comments have made a lot of noise, and we played it just a short while ago. Of course he's going to say, to his players and to us publicly, when and where, we'll find a place to play and this kind of stuff. We don't care where it's going to be. He's not going to go against those guys that he just spent all this time, recruiting and telling him that we've worked so hard and I'm fighting for you. And then he's going to say, yeah, I agree, guys. We really shouldn't be playing. Like, he has to fight for his players.
It's weird because I get what you're saying. I do think he has to fight for his players. And like Jim Harbaugh put out that statement that was like, it's safer here than anywhere else because we administered X amount of tests and had no positives. You look at the rest of the world and where we're recruiting from, they're hotbeds, it's safer here, et cetera, et cetera. And I agree they have to say all that. But conversely, they're going against their school presidents. That's the guy that signed, or guy or gal that signs their paychecks.
And Harbaugh's not exactly been killing it in Michigan.
So it's odd, because if you were telling me they have to say this, they have to be anti-football because the school president is, and that signs the paycheck, I'd be like, you're right. They have to fall in line. But if you're telling me, like you said, they have to support their players, I think you're right. They do. So coaches are kind of in this weird place. But it's also important to remember, I don't think the coaches' voices matter much here. I think it was Andrew Brandt who tweeted this out. He said, similar to when NFL coaches during the CBA negotiations are saying, we're just excited to play, we want our offseason, we're so fired up. Well, guess what? Their voice doesn't matter in CBA negotiations. What's happening in college football is between the school presidents and the medical boards of these conferences. As much as the players and coaches want to play, which I understand they do, their voice should not be the one that the school presidents listen to. If a school president says, this doctor told me we can't do it safely, but Jim Harbaugh says we can, so we're doing it, that school president needs to be fired.
Sure, but I think we're seeing so much pressure. As I mentioned, there's political pressure now. There's all of that. There's people with money involved that are going to try to have their influence. I'm not saying that's what the end result is going to be, but that's why it does remind me of realignment, is because we're seeing all the stuff that went on in 2010 kind of go on. But unfortunately, we're talking about the health and safety and long-term impacts for some of people's futures, not just, okay, what school is going to get paid more money to move to a different conference.
It reminds me of realignment. in the fact that this is the most fascinating college football Twitter has been since then.
I mean, look, we talked more college football on this show than I'm sure most, like, you
know, the other 7 months combined.
It's because, similar to realignment, like I said earlier, these major media outlets are being leaked the story, and they have to go with the story. And because of that, the story changes every 15 minutes. We were talking yesterday before the show, like, are we going to lead with the Big Ten is out, and then we'll go to Royals. And then, like, one, we were like, okay, the Big Ten's not out, so maybe we'll lead Royals. And then, like, 1:30, we were like, okay, the Big Ten's meeting, and they're talking about being out, but we don't know if they're out, so let's push that down to 2:15, because speculation and reports, this one versus this one versus change, the medical board said this, they're now waiting on the Pac-12, doesn't hit the same for the lead, so we're going to move that down. It's just, there is so much happening. It's happening so fast. And there's a deadline similar to realignment where you thought, we got to have this by X date. Man, KU football is supposed to kick off on August 29th. That's 2.5 weeks. Are they kicking off? Are they going to have fans? Are they going to have an opponent? Because Missouri Valley's done, and that's supposed to be Southern Illinois.
Fans' question's been answered itself over many years.
I assume the fans will be no.
Look at that jab.
I assume the fans will be no everywhere. But there's so many things that are still in play, and as long as these conferences continue to not get stuff done, we will just continue to wait and see, which is like the worst approach possible. And like you said, Scott Frost talked. The report came out yesterday that Scott Frost, while reports were the Big Ten is done, he decided to hold practice and then had a post-practice Zoom.
KU's and then it's like saying, practices. I'm just going to go play other people and we don't care what you think about it.
Yeah, it's such a weird time. And with that, well, what he said, we had Dan Wetzel on yesterday, and Dan Wetzel explained that conferences are basically just a pooling of tier one rights. That's how he explained conferences, which is, I know what not what fans want to hear, but that's really what conferences are.
Yes.
And if Nebraska were to be like, the Big Ten's done, we're stepping out, they would be surrendering their tier one media rights for a football season in a year where you're already going to have depressed revenue. He might have said that, but there's no way school president's going to say, we've lost money, but we'll sacrifice our tier one rights and lose more money to then put our kids in danger. It's a very odd situation.
No, they're hoping to get like a reprieve from the Big Ten and be like, you know what? You can do it for 1 year.
There's
it's
no
fine.
Chance if I'm the Big Ten that I'm allowing that. Even if we decide as the Big Ten and not have a season, I'm not letting Nebraska go schedule Big 12 opponents. No,
it's
way.
A little bit like, you know, if you were in college and your girlfriend was going to go study abroad, and you'd be like, look, it's okay while you're abroad. Not a good idea. School.
If I'm the Big Ten, I would actually consider it because you would still own their tier one rights. Now you have to negotiate or whatever, but if Nebraska
like if you got
goes
a cut of it, yeah.
If you got a cut, if you didn't play and then you had some teams go and play other conference
and
games
you got a
and
cut
you got
for
a
doing
cut
nothing?
Of the tier one rights.
See, I wouldn't let it happen though, because you can mention
it
the
opens Pandora's box.
Yeah, and just the PR mess that comes with that. It's like, yeah, we're not playing, and our institutions are still going out and playing. It is, especially if the Big Ten's the only conference or one of the only two that I think it. Even though there might be some money that and revenue that can come in, I don't know if that long term is the message. That's something that people will never forget when it comes to the Big Ten. Like they were the conference that remember that year where we had COVID and three of the conferences were playing. The Big Ten even had some of their own member schools playing in other conferences because the Big Ten didn't go forward.
Well, just imagine if Ohio State won the national title while not technically a member of the Big Ten.
Yeah, and then
for a year like. What is even happening?
Well, the AC, like, and do the other conferences then go grab these teams knowing they won't get the tier one rights? Like, does the Big 12 look at Nebraska and go, they want to play? They've make sense, you know, geographically. We can play an 11 versus plus one schedule and add a conference team, but we don't get any of the money from their games. Why would we add them? Then, like, does the SEC then go, let's just make our conference beastly and add Ohio State? I mean, it's Ohio, Kentucky's right there. Let's do it. There are so many things that are in play that I don't think are really in play, but coaches who have the largest voices are saying these things, and we have to react to them.
Yeah, it is kind of fun. I do like that in all of this, Emmert just continues to look like such a boob.
Well,
he has no authority.
He's just admitting it like, I can't do anything.
He has no authority over football. He has the authority to stop tournaments. So, like, when the FCS canceled, that's basically him because he would have canceled the FCS tournament. They do a true tournament, not a playoff. At the Power 5 level and at the FBS level, all he can do is be like, guys,
it does feel like he could try to, get them together to, talk. But instead, he's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to get involved at all, Mark? Do you want to have a little say here?
Let's be real. Do we want him involved?
I was doing the same thing. If he gets involved, does anything get better? Or do we just then have a villain to say, Mark Emmert screwed us twice now because we lost college basketball and football? And he's already a disliked figure, so maybe just sit this one out as his game plan.
And in fairness, he did that to himself. Like, this actually might be his only chance to be less of a villain, because he's like, look, this is not up to me. College football wanted its own little party that I wasn't invited to, and now they have to live in it. And that's what we're talking about. Like, there's obviously going to have a massive recruiting impact to this.
Oh, yeah.
If the Big Ten decides to go down to the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC play, they're going to get a nice recruiting advantage.
Mm-hmm.
There is an advantage to being the only show in town. Well, now there are only three conferences to watch for college football. There's a nice advantage in that, even if, for safety reasons, they might not want to do that.
Well, if I'm a player too, and I know it's real close to the start of the season, but don't I want to not only preserve my eligibility, but what's to prevent me as a Big Ten player, if I find I can't play, I'm a junior or senior, why can't I go to transfer the SEC this year? Why can't I go do that right now?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not the Pandora's box about the eligibility.
You're going to get like an immediate waiver request, because they do grant those sometimes.
Yeah.
But will they grant them for
pandemic
reasons?
That's where Mark Emmert and the NCAA gets in. That part with granting eligibility and all, that's where Mark Emmert still has control.
Yeah, because like Justin Fields, let's just use him for the example. He's probably, I think he's a junior at Ohio State.
Imagine
he's probably going to go pro.
Up at Missouri?
If he was just like, listen, they're not going to play. I'm going to go pro at the end of the year, but I want to play. So I'm going to go play this year at, you know, Virginia or Missouri or a team that doesn't have an elite quarterback in the ACC or SEC. And then he goes out and balls out. Does he then get drafted? Does Roger Goodell say, Justin Fields, Missouri? And then do his teammates maintain their eligibility?
By the way, if you're a Missouri fan, you just claim that forever.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely should.
If he goes on to be a good pro, if he doesn't want to go to be a good
pro,
he's
an Ohio State player. Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on, that was just like a weird situation. That's the best case scenario for a Missouri fan, because you'd be like, well, we're not claiming this guy. I mean, come on. He just showed up.
And Justin Fields is a weird example now I think about it, because he's already transferred once, which is pretty commonplace
from Georgia,
in college
right?
football now. So yep. Eligibility, that's why this thing I think needs to get settled pretty quick, because Mark Emmert's going to have to handle eligibility questions eventually.
I think Big 12 is going to push back no matter what. I think once all these schools decide they're going to play or not play, everyone's just going to line up with the SEC scheduling. They should. That's the easiest way to do this. The SEC said the end of September would be the end of September.
The only thing the SEC and Big 12 will do differently is the size of their conference, because the SEC is playing 12 starting on the 26th, and their championship game's like December 19th, I believe, off the top of my head. But they have the advantage of you'll be able to play your entire side of your division plus, I think it's now, three or four other conference opponents. Yeah. The Big 12 will be like, yeah, we're going to start on the 26th, and 9 weeks later we're done. You played everyone. You didn't get a rummy non-con win. Everyone else in the world's playing 12 because their conference is bigger, but tough break we don't get to. Does then a 9-0 OU team get pushed to like the 4 line on the playoff thing?
Well, if there's
play
two
nine
conferences,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
you might get two so Big many, 12 teams. There's nobody else playing.
Yeah, college football, it's an absolute mess.
You're not worried about a Pac 12 or a Big 10. Big 10 might get one or two representatives in any given year. Pac 12 has been the Like, it's been them and the Big 12 who've
been the odd man out. Yeah.
So now you're no longer the odd man out because the Pac-12 might not play. So, sure, it's two SEC teams, an ACC team, and you, the Big 12, the 9-win Oklahoma squad.
But then you're seated at the 4 line. You got Clemson in round one despite being going undefeated. We only played 9, so tough break. You got to move back. There's just
– Well, it's not like they wouldn't – if they went 9-0, like, logical person would dictate that the other two games they would have played would have been rummy. Now, maybe when you're Oklahoma, sometimes you play a big boy earlier in the season. I think they were scheduled
to play a real team this year. I forget who it was.
Bama? Was it Bama?
No, Bama was USC.
Like
USC. The big ones were like Michigan, Washington, and Oregon, Ohio State, which I'm very sad we lost both those games. But
Tennessee, it wasn't a huge opponent.
Tennessee's supposed to be better this year.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was Missouri State, Tennessee, and then at Army were the non-con games for Oklahoma this year.
Tennessee would have been
A win, though.
Yeah, but it's a tier B SEC school. It's a win, but you can at least say they challenged themselves in the non-con. But the Big 12, I think, is down this year. So you look around and you're like, yeah, they beat a Texas team that's just okay. They beat Oklahoma State, supposed to be good this year, but they beat Baylor, who's in a new coach and down. Iowa State always underachieves under Matt Campbell, so they're whatever. Kansas is Kansas. Kansas State, I think, is going to be down this year because they lost so much of their line and their defense and their defensive coordinator. It like you said, it's an absolute mess. And the fact that we're just kicking around these ideas when we go, this is a mess, is a real problem for every conference because they're having the same conversations plus the health element.
Since we're trying to figure out solutions, the Cardinals should just have to play a million doubleheaders, right?
I think they should forfeit the game. At a certain point, Manfred,
do we just
say,
give the W's to the other teams, though? Or do we just let them play the normal amount? It's all L's for the Cardinals, but no wins for the other guys.
I would give L. That's the thing. I don't know I would give wins, but it's, like with Cleveland, for example, let's use them for example. We now know Clevenger and Plesac snuck out. If they miss games because of it, they should take L's because they snuck out. The Cardinals should eventually have to
They were scheduled to start. Those are L's.
The Cardinals should eventually start taking some L's because the reports are they were at the casino. If you're going to sneak out to the casino at all, I mean, come on now. Like, you're a professional athlete. You don't have to go to the casino. There's a lot of better things to do.
I watched The Last Dance. I mean, saw Jordan in the back of the plane.
Yeah, you can
bet thousands of dollars.
You can gamble without going to the casino. And two, the whole way this works is you don't go to the casino or don't go out to nightclubs or whatever. Eventually, they got to start taking L's. And if we have to just hand out wins to teams that didn't play to punish the Cardinals, it doesn't feel great. But I feel like if you're the Cubs or the Tigers or the Pirates and you've lost a series and now you're going to have to play doubleheaders in the back end, which are going to be tougher games, that doesn't seem fair to you. And the only thing that happened was the Cardinals broke protocol.
Yeah, the Cardinals should be the only team that is directly, if possible, they shouldn't have a benefit by not playing baseball
games.
Five games, they shouldn't get a benefit of, all right, you get to play, you only have to play 50 games this year or whatever. That's benefit them in their win percentage. That should not benefit the Cardinals. And I do think the idea of
that's why I'd rather
doing,
them have to play 60.
Okay, I just don't know how you get the 60 in. Because eventually, there's only so many times you can do a day-night, seven-inning doubleheader. They've missed, 15 games?
Yeah. Come Friday, they will have 5 games played, and the Royals will be at 20.
Yeah.
20, yeah. So they're going to be, they're not at 15 yet, they're going to be at 15 down. That's at least 7 days of day-night doubleheaders, and that doesn't include travel, because it's against, 4 different teams now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd said, like, I would alter scheduling. Like, so that it lined up better, so that you could stay in a city longer, so that you could doubleheader like every other day against a team and be like, oh, remember you're supposed to play 6 against the Royals? Sorry, for travel wise, it's easier if we just leave you in the city, eliminate the off day so that there's no travel, and you have to play, 3 doubleheaders in 6 days against this same squad. And I know that that's like,
it punishes the other team too now, because
it does. There's no denying it, but I don't have, like, there's no way to fully make it even. And I don't like the idea of the Cardinals getting in the postseason because they played 47 games and had a slightly better winning percentage. Like, to me, it's got to be your winning. If we're doing winning percentage, except for the teams who finish with less, it's got to be winning percentage plus you better be X number of games better than them in winning percentage. Like, we give the team below you 25 points in winning percentage because you played 13 less games. So you won 650 for your winning percentage and they're 625. They're in the playoffs. You're not. Like, there's going to have to be a lot of maneuvering if you're going to do it that way, to me.
Yeah, I agree that there's going to be a lot of maneuvering. I don't know. I think win percentage is a flawed way to do it, but it's bad. Why they announced it when it first came out. But I mean,
they
now
had done it years ago. Yeah, years ago.
But now that we're actually in it for this year, you look around.
It's
and
no good.
Really, the Marlins are kind of benefiting from it right now, too. They're playing good baseball, mm-hmm. But you could argue
but they've
one
only
of the
played
reasons,
10 games.
Exactly. So you're like, what is a team after 10 games? And the Royals were bad after 10 games. They're playing fine now. So it's. I don't know what you do. I know for a fact whatever Rob Manfred decides will be wrong. So we have that going for us as baseball fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is also the example why the talk of having the bubble for the postseason should be an automatic and a no-brainer for baseball. That report, Jeff Passan says that they're having discussions about bubbling the postseason for baseball, maybe 3 different cities. To me, you do it out in L.A. and maybe one of the retractable cities that have the retractable roof and have the postseason. You can't afford for the World Series to get postponed like this. Imagine if this happened during the middle of the postseason and the Cardinals and whoever they're playing in the NL, the NL Central or divisional round or whatever, that series is delayed a week. You can't have the other team sitting around for a week and a half waiting to find out who their opponent is going to be. I think you have to go for a bubble in the postseason.
I agree that the bubble makes the most sense for the postseason, but if I recall from the negotiations, which feels like forever ago now.
Right.
The players were the ones who were against the bubble. The owners were on board. Now, one of the reasons the players were against the bubble is they were like, we don't want to be in Arizona in August.
Right.
Which is understandable.
Yeah, and that was 3 months or
that
whatever.
Was, yeah.
And it was so miserable.
They would have to play. Some teams would be at Chase Field. Others would be, Surprise and be outside and just sweat it out. So I get maybe when it's September, October, and there'll be less teams and they'll all get to play in the big stadium, their tune will change. But at last look, the players were anti the idea of a bubble. I don't know if their stance has changed. Hopefully it has, because I agree the bubble makes the most sense. But if they're anti the bubble, we're going to have a real problem.
They're not going to be anti it for the postseason. It's a month.
I can't imagine they would be.
It's a month and only a couple teams are actually going to, 2 teams will be there for the full month. The rest are going to be gone in 2 weeks.
I mean, it's half the league making the bubble, though.
True.
Yeah, 16. But we're talking, but you do three, like I said, you do 3 cities. After the first round of playoffs, it eliminates to 2. And in the World Series, it's 1, and you just leave all those sites open so that it doesn't become the home city of the team who's in it. Because most likely we're talking about playoff potential teams, because it's going to be, the bubbles are going to be L.A.,
Yeah, Arizona will probably get a bubble.
Arizona, it's going to be cities that have domes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, that's or sunny.
Yep,
or LA. Yeah. Or whatever.
LA, Phoenix, Houston, you know, those are the stadiums we're talking
probably
about.
Probably a here. Florida. Miami's park is covered.
Miami, yeah.
Although we now know that.
Although
we
maybe not Miami, because that
we
hasn't
can't
been
trust
hungry.
The players when they're in Atlanta, which apparently is the nightlife hub of the world based on Lou Williams and the Marlins.
So you're saying trust them in Miami? Stadium, you know, like
yeah.
That's
what you're saying. Send them to Milwaukee. They've got Miller Park. It's covered up. Send them to Milwaukee.
Yes, I mean, if there's one thing I've learned about baseball players recently, they need nightlife like 21-year-olds need nightlife. Apparently, sitting in their hotel and being professional athletes is just making their skin crawl.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be interesting to see how that all plays out. Certainly, college football changing as well by the hour. We'll let you get back to work, man. Of course, so Rob Redden on the drive this afternoon with Carrington and Sean. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. That's the Forum every Tuesday here on Cody and Gold. Coming up in 90 seconds, Serta's Fantasy Flash looking at running back Mark Ingram. What value does he have? Where should you draft him? Serta addresses that. We'll also get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio. Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
All right, let's talk some Chiefs here. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Mitch Holthus was on with Fesco in the morning for his weekly visit, and he brought up something about a new requirement within the practice squad that I think he thinks will benefit the Chiefs. I think it's another way to look at the way the roster could be constructed come September the 10th when the Chiefs open up against the Texans. So we'll get to that here momentarily. But something we're going to be doing leading up to the start of the season here during the Chiefs Red Half Hour, taking a look at a couple of players and whether or not you think they're due for that big jump, whether you think they're going to have that flat type of season, or maybe they take a step back heading into the 2020 season. So the two guys involved this week, Mecole Hardman and Tano Passanio, are they staying the same? They taking the jump? Where are they going? Let us know what you guys think as well on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610. So I'll start with Passanio, and I'll go defense to start with him. I think for me, I'm going to go ahead and say it's just to stay the same or fall back, but I'll go with stay the same. I don't see a scenario where he takes a jump, because I was impressed with what he did under Spags defense last year, and it fits him. It's a Spags type of guy, you would imagine, going forward as well. My only issue with expecting more, one, I think he already took that big jump last year. The other problem is...
He did take a jump last year, whether you call it a big or
sure,
a little jump.
Okay,
sure.
He took a jump. The issue would be... Where does that come from, and does he get the opportunity again? Because they go out and get Taco Charlton... I'm not really concerned as much about Breland Speak if I'm passing you, but still, you've got Okafor involved. You also, the biggest thing to me is what Taco Charlton may or may not bring to the table. I don't see a scenario where he takes a jump. Last year was a jump for passing you. Why would I believe that he can take another jump this year? I just don't think he has the opportunity to do so. And I don't think he has much. He's one of the guys like next year will probably not be on the roster because they're not going to be able to, he'll get paid somewhere else.
I think he has the talent to do so. Because the reason I think he took that jump last year, and jump does not mean like he became the most important player on the Chiefs defense, but Tano Passanio saw a serious increase in his productiveness last year. Like, seriously. And the reason why I would think it's possible again this year is because I think for the first time ever, he looked good in a Spags defense. Had 4 sacks, had 22 tackles, despite not playing a ton, right? He wasn't out on the field all the time. But the reason why I don't think he's going to get worse. Like, I think he's found probably a good home as a role player. I don't think he takes a step back. But the point you've made is, how can he get better if there's incredible...
Where are the reps coming from?
Yeah, if there's incredible depth at the defensive line. The reason why he'll still look okay is because Chris Jones and Frank Clark are going to do some heavy lifting for you, and all the other guys in the offensive line like Mike Pinnell and Taco Charlton that they will rotate out, and they have free agency dollars, so I wouldn't even put it past them adding even more depth at different positions. Not necessarily defensive line, although we do joke about Jadeveon Clowney. There's a lot of different options for them across the board. It's hard to see how he takes the step forward, but I don't think he falls back. I think Tano has found a good role in this defense, which means I think he's a pretty similar player to what you got last year out of him.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 913-576-7610. Unfortunately, this from the 816, I feel like K-Pass will stay the same. not explosive enough to really get out of the quarterback, not fast enough to hang with running backs in pass coverage. I think Mecole Hardman will be about the same as well. That from the 816. I think it's just reps for Pastineau. And I think he actually is someone that will get paid pretty decently next offseason somewhere else.
Might be like a 2-for-12 or something.
Yeah.
I think that he can get like an Emmanuel Ogba type of contract if he hits free agency. And that was a 2-year, $15 million deal. Yep. I think Tano Pastineau is the exact same type of player, really physically gifted guy who's not an incredible player, but he's a solid rotational player who can make plays for you.
Got 4 sacks, productive enough considering his limited number of time, but you don't see him getting better, Serta.
No, there's just too much depth for him to get like significant snaps because he's not Chris Jones, he's not Frank Clark, like he's not going to make this all of a sudden this like dominant turn in his playing career. And yeah, I'm interested in Taco Charlton. Alex Okafor was very good last year when he played. Mike Pinnell is going to be a significant part of that defensive line. I like Tano a lot. I just don't see where he's going to get the opportunity.
That seems to be the biggest,
barring serious injury for other members of the defensive line.
That would always have, you know, that could come into play and could always alter this a little bit. So take a jump, stay the same, or fall back. What about Mecole Hardman at the wide receiver spot? And you know, we've seen this offseason, clearly he's made it, you know, he has focused even more so on specifics in his game heading into this year, another year under his belt. Another offseason, I should say, under his belt. Even if it's been a weird one, he still, as we know, had an opportunity to work with Patrick Mahomes a little bit more this offseason, clearly trying to get stronger as well. I don't want to say the same thing as Pastineau, but there is part of me that's like, okay,
where's
he getting the reps as well? I think he actually takes a jump, but it maybe not in production. I just said, what do you mean? How can he take a jump if it's not production? But I just think there might be some noticeable differences in his game, both as a route runner and even just physically, that you can say, oh, he's taking a jump. I don't know if necessarily we're going to say that he's going to have 400 more yards receiving this year or something like that. But I could see him taking a jump just physically and where you think, okay, he took a jump. I feel a lot better about even what the next season could bring when Sammy Watkins or whatever may not be around, and where he truly becomes your number two wide receiver.
I think he can make a jump, but the only way he can make that is if his statistics improve. And not like those two things go hand in hand. I think that's how we'll know he made that jump. It was Mitch Holtish yesterday, and he was on the show again with Fesco in the morning, and you can catch that up at 610sports.com. He was pointing out all the things, right? He only had 9 total targets in the last half of last year and still had 6 catches for 164 yards and 2 touchdowns. His two biggest production games came when Tyreek Hill was down, right? Not surprising. Some of his early season production came when another guy was out. The reason why I think he'll get more targets is if he's actually made the jump you're talking about, he becomes a better route runner. He becomes more of a weapon they can rely on inside of the passing game. So he doesn't become this, you know, one trick pony who runs down the field. Is if he has developed in those ways, then he should be taking snaps from some from Sammy Watkins, but a lot from DeMarcus Robinson. DeMarcus Robinson got a ton of snaps for this team last year. More than you probably remember. As in like 75% of the team's total offensive snaps. And despite Mecole Hardman getting a quarter of that, you know, like not a quarter of that, but significantly less than DeMarcus Robinson, he had equal production. DeMarcus Robinson had 75% of the snaps and like 400 and 500, you know, like between 400 and 500 yards and a few touchdowns. Mecole Hardman, right? Like 500-yard wide receiver with barely any snaps on the field last year. He's far more productive than DeMarcus Robinson right now, but they put Robinson on the field more because they trusted him more. So if he takes that leap you're talking about where like he's better at those little things, his production will increase with it just because he is more talented, will get more snaps, will get more yards.
And DeMarcus Robinson got 55 targets last year. Mecole Hardman ended up with 41 targets. Yeah, in the 20s as far as receptions go. So those are the two.
14 less targets. He was on the field way more. And by the way, I just want you to know what kind of damage Mecole Hardman can do with 14 more targets.
Well, but I will say that when he was on the field, I think they were drawing up things specifically for him. Just, all right, just get him open downfield, 70-yard touchdown. And it's because he's that type of explosive, whereas DeMarcus Robinson's not really that kind of player. I just don't see a world where, like, I think he could go get 700 receiving yards this year, which would be an improvement, but I just don't see how he's going to have the opportunity to take, like, a giant leap forward where he's, like, an 1,100-yard wide receiver, because he's going to take snaps from Demarcus Robinson. He's not taking snaps from Sammy.
I don't think he is either. I think they like too much what Sammy does day in and day out on a consistency basis to do that. And it doesn't have to be. I didn't say giant, you know, like the game, the name of the game.
You're not saying he's becoming a top 10 wide receiver.
Stay the same or fall back.
Something.
There's
yeah.
no,
yeah.
like, yeah. I would put a chance that Tano Passanio falls back. I don't think it's going to happen. I think he stays the same. But at least for me with Mecole Hardman, the only two choices to come from here are he is exactly the same type of player or he takes a step forward. Because it's hard to imagine in what, and wide receivers do take steps back from rookie years to sophomore years. It happened with Sammy Watkins. It's happened with other guys in their career where the first couple of years, they're higher productive wise. They get focused on more and not do it. But with Mecole Hardman, he's never, like, it's going to take a long time for Mecole Hardman to be the people that defenses focus on first. Because they got to deal with Kelce and Hill first. And hell, they might have to deal with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, yeah. too, to go with it.
And when Mahomes is involved in the picture along with Andy Reid, it's hard to imagine somebody offensively taking a step back from a year ago. This was really interesting for Mitch Holthus this morning on Fesco in the morning. He brought up some of the new practice squad requirements, and I think this can benefit the Chiefs in a big way.
Well, and I don't have to cut him. Because you're going, man, we got to make a tough decision, right? The 11th hour decision. Do you keep Tucker Charlton? No, we can keep him. Put him on practice squad, but make him one of the four veteran designations that nobody can snatch him, and we'll see what happens next week or the next week or the next week. If you're a young team, it becomes, you know, it's still a developmental thing, and the Chiefs will still use it as developmental. But for a veteran team that has a lot of talent, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Saints, the 49ers, it becomes a way of parking a guy and not risking losing him.
I thought that's really, really interesting when I heard that driving in this morning when he was on with Fesco and the guys there. Because, like, the practice squad, typically, we've always known it to be just, okay, you have a bunch of young developmental guys. And once you're a veteran, you can't be placed on the practice squad. But because of the new changes, CBA, and also, I don't know if COVID's playing a role in this or not, but and everything, right? COVID's playing a role in everything. So, sure, I'll go ahead and say it's because of COVID. And six players now that are veterans can be on your practice squad. And then, as Mitch pointed out there, four of them can be, like, locked into you. Nobody can steal them from your practice squad. So essentially, roster-wise, the Chiefs, where they have some depth in certain areas, and specifically whether it's Taco Charlton or we're talking about guys that might be fringe cuts, Charlton, Breland Speaks, whoever it may be, those guys, I'm like, there's no way they're cutting them now if they were even ever considering it, Cody, because now you're going to look
would
at
cut
it. Why
Speaks if you can technically
would
you, just stick them on the
practice
squad?
You stick them there and you call them up whenever needed. There's veterans. You can have them on there all season. And you can have them as both of them as one of your four guys if there's not a spot for them. And not even just those two. It can be anybody. It can be wide receivers and further down the depth chart. No matter what it may be, they don't have to qualify as, you know, what, first or second year players, whatever the specific practice squad requirements are. I think it's a big boost for Kansas City and also trying to keep some more depth on that team on the defensive line, even so, where they already have a lot of it.
They don't have a ton of depth in other positions. So it's perfect for that, and it's perfect for wide receiver. Like, if you want to hold on to Byron Pringle forever, Byron Pringle's one of your four. And Byron Pringle had a 100-yard game when they were down and out and didn't have a lot of other wide receivers.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did his job when called upon. But it's really just for, like, I can almost tell you the guys now who are at risk of being put on those things. And it's probably an offensive lineman, a guy they want to protect because they're weak at that position and they're going to want to hold on to numbers. It is it's one to two defensive linemen. Taco, who people think could get cut. Breland, who people think could get cut. Those guys are on the list. And then it's Byron Pringle. So it's like you can kind of already pick where those guys are coming from.
It's a big benefit to have.
But that's a benefit across the league. The question is, does it benefit the Chiefs more than it benefits others? And at least defensive line-wise, it could, because you weren't sure what you were going to do with, like, where Taco was going to land on this thing. Or even where a guy was going to...
See, I think it does, because if you are a team that does have some veterans and you're able to... You're not trying to keep it as a true developmental practice squad.
The veteran contract is where you benefit. Like, because the Chiefs obviously went for some cheap veteran contract and still can. Like, this is where I might explore, I can keep a cheap veteran who doesn't have to necessarily be on that, can't still be on the practice squad, but can't be let go for me even if I'm deep at that position. That, to me, makes more sense. And it makes it less scary to go after somebody in an already deep position, because then you can still hold on to that player as well. But there are a lot of teams who are going to take advantage of this because, you know, they're going to want to hold on to those players anyway. So Kansas City has helped in one position. I think it helps them from having to make some difficult decisions, but it's going to help a lot of teams with that, which means maybe even the waiver pool's a little thinner Because, you know, there's plenty of sniping off of people's practice squads and waiver pool that people target. How do you make that work going forward is a little more difficult.
If it's the difference being able to keep Taco Charlton or make your decision another year, wait another year on development for Breland Speaks, whatever it may be, then I think it's a nice benefit for the Chiefs to have. Interesting there, Mitch Holthus on with Fesco in the morning. We know the Chiefs have some money between the opt-outs and also that restructure for Alex Okafor, and he was part of our conversation we were just having a second ago. But now they're around, what, $15 million or so, Cody? So how should they spend it? How should they spend that money?
Well, when you guys were gone, Pete and I did a little choose your own adventure, if you read those comics when you were a kid. So I'm going to give you a couple of different ways to spend the money instead of just the one. How does that sound?
Let's do it.
All right, hand me some music, Serta. See, look, it sounds very... Can't you imagine like being like an 8-bit video game and being Zelda going down the path right now?
It's definitely retro video game.
Three choices for you in the text line, 913-576-7610. The Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line. Then I will give you a choice to spend your money, and then I would like you to choose the path you would like to do it. Number one, you just get Jadeveon Clowney. That's it. That's the path. That's the option. That's your adventure. You're going to build one of the best defensive lines in all of football, similar, as Serta said, to the 49ers defensive line last year. Two, you can sign Everson Griffin and Aqib Talib for a little cornerback depth. So those are your two choices. And one final option in your adventure choosing, Devonta Freeman and Logan Ryan, the better available cornerback instead of Aqib Talib based on normal rankings outside the system. You can choose your money a number of ways. You would not choose to keep your money. Those are your three adventure options.
Say,
which way would you like to go?
Can I go first?
Go
you guys
it.
Can't take the path that I choose.
Okay, let me hear
it's
it.
Yours.
Okay.
I take Everson Griffin and Aqib Talib.
Why?
Because Everson Griffin's still very good. Aqib Talib, I know, was injured at the end of last season. But prior to his injury, he was still playing at a very solid level for a player his age. They're both affordable. You can get them both on one-year deals and walk after the season. Perfect compliments for what the Chiefs need.
So I like the two-for-one type of scenario. Those are very tempting. You guys know where I you're right. We can't choose it. I would prefer just to roll over the money. But if I'm going to have to spend the money, go big or go
it's
home.
It's adventure. We don't
go big or go home. It's the option number one. It's Jadeveon Clowney in this scenario. If I'm forced to spend the money, I'm going with Clowney for the reasons we've discussed quite a bit, which is this defensive line all of a sudden just is nasty. Nasty. Clowney in the mix. You get some more depth just in case somebody gets hurt. Then you're like, okay, we're going to be all right through this. And if they're all healthy all season long, this defense, you thought I'm crazy for talking top five, you won't call me crazy anymore at that point in time if they got Clowney as part of the picture. So if I have to spend the money, I'm choosing that adventurous route for Clowney. And it's good for Clowney too. He goes to a contender. He might win the ring. He gets to have another double-digit sack season. It goes and gets paid big time the following year. It's a win-win for everybody.
I think the real dud storyline in this combo is the Devonta Freeman, Logan Ryan route. While they definitely get bet at corner, insert it's another like 1 year deal. You're not going to be on the hook for a long time for him situation. And so is Devonta Freeman. I don't think they need another running back. I don't hate that they could use another corner.
He's also not good.
No, but you know,
you don't need a running back at all.
Well, I didn't want to put Drake Kirkpatrick, who you also don't like. And I just don't like, I don't see the need for running back. While I see a need for corner, I'd rather just be stacked the defensive line. Everson Griffin gives me more of that to go with an older guy and Aqib Talib. But if I were choosing my adventure, I'd probably choose the same one as you. I'm going Jadeveon. I mean, I want elite players on elite defenses, and it sounds like he could be had for a 1 year deal to go with it. So why wouldn't I like that, I guess?
Yeah, option one
something
is
something about
strong.
Just being great at one position that makes the rest of your defense look so much better. To me, that's the obvious factor into that scenario. That's why I would be pretty tempted to go the Jadeveon Clowney route if I were going to choose my own adventure.
Yeah, I mean, if I was able to still choose two, I do like that, Serta, because you're knocking out two of them right there. You're getting your cornerback position some more depth, wondering what's going to happen with Bashaud Breland as well, and you're addressing the defensive line there as well with Griffin. So, like, that's probably the most, I think that's the smartest way to spend your money because you're getting two. Clowney, though, you're talking about right away, just the impact. Like, he was very motivated in this scenario as well. Option three. No, I like Logan Ryan, but no, we don't need Devonta Freeman in this picture.
Did you re-choose your own adventure books when you were a kid, Serta?
I'm sure I read a couple of them. I don't think I was heavily into them. There's a lot, people are making a lot of TV shows like that now.
Well, you get to choose the ending?
Yeah. You have, there's several, they shoot several different scenarios, and throughout the series, you get to pick where you want to go.
Oh, God! I'm not prepared for that. I just need you to tell me which way it ends.
Yeah, they did it on Black Mirror, and I think that there was another show. They filmed a whole season like that.
Little Chiefs, choose your own adventure instead.
Over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beard text line, 913-576-7610. Give me Everson Griffin. He's better than Clowney. A lot of that on the text line. Griffin over Clowney. Clowney is a clown. A lot of people not a fan of the Clowney decision there. Someone else says, Rock Chalk, bring to leave home.
Everson Griffin is going to be 33 years old, so it's not like he's young.
20.
But he's that Terrell Suggs type of veteran who's just going to come in and produce.
So it says, am I the only one not sold on Clowney? I mean, there's a legit reason he's still unemployed with the season starting in less than 30 days. Well, remember, he does have some offers.
He
has a couple offers. He doesn't want, can you blame him? It's Cleveland and it's Miami. For more money.
Both up-and-coming teams.
Uh-huh.
Both I still like
not on, one, not on one-year deals. Those would be multi-years offers,
to,
but
you know, something this year.
Yeah. I don't know. Clowney. Option one. Option two is very intriguing, though.
Tempting. Option two is very tempting. I can't believe you didn't go with the Jayhawk. Right in front of you.
Did you not hear what Serta said? He said, I'm going first if nobody else takes it. I may or may not have been selecting that initially.
We can't all choose the same adventure.
We didn't talk before this. I had no idea what he was going to pick. I was probably going to go with two initially. He went with two. I'm fine with one.
I'm not getting stuck with Logan.
Nobody wants three. Nobody wants
option
three.
We're just going to have to share the adventure if that's the case.
Take the fourth option, Dre Kirkpatrick.
And the fifth option is roll over the money. Roll it over. Roll
that's too many adventures.
The Texans is why not keep the money. I know. That's where I would be, but that wasn't an option
to choose your adventure.
No, it wasn't.
And what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what's the point? The cap goes down. You roll it over. You save some money. You may be able to take care of Kelsey as well.
I need to win World Series or Super Bowls. Yeah, I can't you
can
right.
You can just unload all those one-year contracts next year, and that'll free up cap space anyway.
Sweet.
I don't know if it's going to free up enough.
You're only rolling over $12 million.
Last minute. Hard Knocks premieres tonight. It's going to be tonight at 9 p.m. on HBO.
Give me some Hard Knocks.
Both of the LA teams. I don't like Hard Knocks anymore. I feel like it's gone really downhill. I feel like they are heavily supervised at what they can air and what they can't. I don't know how it's going to work this season, and I'm more curious than ever because I haven't gotten my training camp fix that I usually get by going up to St. Joe and doing stuff like that. So I'm actually curious to see how they're doing this.
Yeah, how do they do the split? Like, is it half the show is Rams, half the show is Chargers, or does it cut from Sean McVay and the next scene all of a sudden it's Anthony Lynn and the Chargers? How are they going to do that? But it is kind of that first sign of, hey, football season is here and we don't have the preseason. So I am fired up for this. I'll be watching that live tonight. If not, you can always catch, like, I think HBO puts it up after. If you have that. This is one of those other conversations. You need the login from somebody. You need, or you just know Serta, one of the two.
Yeah, whatever gets the job done. I mean, I kind of like Serta. I just kind of written it off in years past. Last year when they had all that juicy material,
I know.
They kept showing me like
it's still fun
like two
to
years
see
ago
behind
they
the
had
scenes,
some
man.
Of the Browns and I just kept getting David Kajuice stories. I don't care about those.
There was episodes last year where I just fast forwarded through half of it.
It was not their best season, but I still like seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff. There's some funny moments. You kind of get to know the coaches a little bit more.
Stuff can interest me too. We'll see.
Yeah, how is that approached in these Hard Knocks? What's cut from it? Is that going to be the number one focus of tonight's episode? Probably good guess that would be the case. Coming up next, we head into the noon hour. Of course, we'll have what's trending and who do you believe more for this 2020 season when it comes to the Royals, and specifically, what do you believe within this Royals season? And we'll also take a look at whether or not athletes should be paying more attention to this.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.